but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
BFFT. Now, built by High Caliber Millwrights, in for John Canzano, here's Judah Newby and Stephen Vaughn with the Bald-Faced Truth.
Oh, Murray keeps it. Murray being chased by Witherspoon. Oh. Floats for Wilson. Off target to Kobe Bryant. And there goes Kobe Bryant. With a house call for Seattle. And a Marshawn Lynch homage.
Oh, love the Marshawn homage. Joint practice Green Bay today between the Seahawks and Packers. Welcome back in hour two of the show. Jude and it'll be Stephen Vaughn filling in. On 750 The Game in the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Network. You know, when I'm in the chair, we're going to get our Seahawk perspective and a lot of NFL talk throughout the show. And got a little scuffle today. So I reached out to Greg Bell, cover Seahawk football, Tacoma News Tribune. And he's like, yeah, let's do it. So Greg joining us on the line now. Greg, thanks for making time. How are you and how are things in Green Bay this fine afternoon?
Great. Sunny, not too hot, quiet, small town Midwest, Wisconsin. So it was very, very peaceful and tranquil, except for the fighting at the practice.
That might be the loudest thing that happened today in Green Bay.
Yeah, that'll be the life of the party today in Green Bay.
I got to say, though, before we get to the football, I saw on your timeline, this is the day that the kiddos get to come out in Green Bay and do that tradition of bringing their bikes and letting the players ride along with them into practice. The Seahawks participated in that today. And as a father of a very soon-to-be four-year-old little girl who will always be my baby, I got a little teary-eyed when I saw your photo of Julian Love finding one of the little toddlers out there, one of the little walkers, and her little princess bike, and them walking hand-in-hand together. That's what it's all about.
It had the pink and green streamers on it. And, I mean, he passed over many bikes that would have fit him much bigger, and much bigger kid and older kids. Yeah, that was really cool. I'm a good girl dad, too. My girl's 22 now. I'm old. But it was really cool that the Seahawks players embraced it. Not all of them did. Some of them took a golf cart. They dress in the visiting team locker room in Lambeau Field like they would for a game inside the main stadium. And then the practice field is across the parking lots outside the stadium and then across a six-lane highway to over by the Don Hudson Center. And so their practice complex is a little ways. It's probably a 3-5 minute walk. But the Seahawks knew about the tradition, and the kids line up every Packers practice day. They do it every day. And I didn't understand that it was their bikes. I thought they were just these bikes that were provided by the Packers or whatever around town. No, line bikes, none of that. No, it's these kids bringing the bikes out of their own garages and bedrooms and lining them up and saying, please pick me, please pick my bike, please pick my bike. And then they grab the players' helmets and walk alongside the bike. Some of the Seahawks had obviously not been on little kids' bikes or Huffies for a while because Tariq Young, the wide receiver, is like, wait, no brakes? And the little girl goes, no, you got to go pedal backwards. So, yeah, it was fun. It's cool to see. It's cool to a lot of guys said they hadn't been on bikes in a long time.
Yeah, if you are on X or Twitter, go check it out at GBell Seattle. That photo just will make your day, and it certainly made mine. And then the practice happened, Greg. And I guess before we get into that, you know, Seahawks Packers getting together for a joint practice. Just what do you make of this little pairing between, you know, a couple of NFC rivals, I should say, but it sounds like, you know, Mike and Matt LaFleur have a lot of respect for one another. And it was the Titans, I believe, last year and then the Packers right this year. From your vantage point, how did this all come together and how did it work out this year?
Well, no doubt Mike McDonald wants to have joint practices. He did it with John Harbaugh when he was 10 years an assistant with the Ravens. They did it quite a bit with Washington and other teams on the East Coast. He packed up the whole operation last year to Nashville, and they spent 5 days there. They had two practices before the preseason game against the Titans. He likes to do it, obviously, with teams that they're not going to play on the regular season schedule coming up. And they like it because it's a controlled environment. They can blow the whistle when a quarterback's about to get hit, or a running back, or anybody for that matter, in the open field. They limit open field tackling and really don't try not to have guys bring anybody else to ground and do any form tackling. They still have the skirmishes and the fights, and, I mean, that's part of it, and some of it is bravado, and it just feels like the players feel like they have to do that. But it's much more controlled than a preseason game, and it's the one chance you're going to get ones versus ones. Both coaching staffs of joint practices around the league want to put ones versus ones in a joint practice so they don't have to in the preseason. And this, in fact, will be the last time that the Seahawks starters will go against starting players from another team before the games get real September 7 against the 49ers. They won't play at all on Saturday against the Packers in the actual preseason game. LaFleur said he is going to play his starters at least for some of the time Saturday, but Mike McDonald said after practice, nope, Jalen Milroe will be the starting quarterback and play the whole game for Seattle, and that none of the starters will play for the Seahawks here in Green Bay on Saturday. It's just the players like it. It breaks up the monotony of going against the same guy. Leonard Williams said that he tends to cheat later in training camp, knowing the tells of an offensive lineman he goes against every day at Seahawks. And so it's good to have to not cheat and play honest and read a block as it happens to keep them sharp for the regular season. It's all those reasons they do it.
So a little fisticuffs. What happened here from your vantage point?
Well, a lot of it's normal. I've seen a few of these, and nobody was throwing helmets and taking their helmets off and swinging them like I've seen happen before. It wasn't that. But what really happened is Devin Witherspoon happened. He always does this. He chirps, he yells, he struts, he spins the ball, he spikes it. He does everything to get under other teams' skin, not to mention I think he's their best overall player. And one of the Packers' offensive linemen, their starting right tackle, got tired of it. And Zach Tom, actually at the end of a play, when Witherspoon was woofing again, a running play up the middle, Zach Tom, the starting right tackle for the Packers, did a flying punch. It looked like an MMA type of punch, a WWE move, and landed it onto Witherspoon's face mask. And then Witherspoon, of course, didn't like that. He punched Tom back and hit him in his face mask, and Tom punched him back. And then Ernest Jones came in like he was on a white horse and just went to work. Ernest Jones does some off-season boxing training to stay in shape. And he was doing combinations and uppercuts. He was doing a barrage that wasn't just slaps. But everyone kept their helmet on. They were smart enough to do that. Nobody broke hands or hurt their hands, which the coaches always worry about. And Mike McDonald didn't mind. He just sat back and kind of watched it happen and let it go for a while. Assistants had to come in, and they were rolling around on the ground. And in fact, wrestling was going on in the mosh pit. There were a couple more scrapes like that. At the end of practice, some Packers came over into the Seahawks huddle after they'd already broken for the day. And then the words were exchanged and pushing. And Leonard Williams saw a couple Packers that didn't even have pads on. And they're like, who are you? You're not even in pads. Go finish your rehab. Get the hell out of here. And it was a little more contentious than the Tennessee practices last year, but not over the top.
Sounds like the perfect, you know, joint practice scuffle, right? You know?
Yeah. That's good. Three or four of them.
Good. That's good. And no one got seriously hurt. How'd the teams respond after that?
Professionally. They went on to the next play. There seemed to be no lingering. Like, there were a couple, as I said, the defense had about three or four of them, but they involved different players each time, so there wasn't seem to be any grudges held. And they moved on. And again, the players love to do this, just vent a little bit. And they know the coaches know it's coming, so they somewhat permit it. So they push the envelope. And I was on the radio, normal radio show in KJR I do every day in Seattle this morning, and I told those guys that I was going to watch Devin Witherspoon get in a fight, and I knew he would because that's the type of player he is to get under other players' skin. And in this environment, it's almost a prerequisite, and it's the last time, as I said, that they're going to go against another team until the games get real.
Yeah, you may have gotten minus money on Devin Witherspoon to get in a scuffle. To your point, that's well put. Guys on the field, you know, who stood out today in this kind of new practice environment going against a different team?
Jackson Smith and Jigba, to me, was the star of the day on offense. Three really good catches over the middle and outside to begin the scrimmage. And he let the Packers know about it, spinning the ball and doing first down signals and kind of strutting about it. It was indicative of the work he's put in with Darnold. They've really grown, and it was Darnold a lot to Cooper Kupp and slot to start training camp, and lately a lot more to Smith and Jigba. The other noteworthy parts were that offensively, Kenneth Walker practiced fully for the third straight day. That hasn't happened in a while, maybe the entire camp. It's when pads have been on. He had been off with a sore foot and missing quite a bit in August. At the beginning of this week, Mike McDonald said, Walker needs to start getting on the field so he can get some confidence in meshing with this new offense and confident he can run it in the regular season. And Walker seems to have heeded that and has had three full days here in a row now with the starting offense. Starting offensive line looks like it's going to get set. Jalen Sindel was starting again today at center instead of Oluwatimi, who had the job in early August until he had a back injury 2 weeks ago. Sindel in that offensive line, of course, brilliant in the first two preseason games, 119 yards rushing in the first quarter. Sindel blocking linebackers, safeties, and cornerbacks on the third level, showing his athleticism. It looks like Sindel's going to start the opener, and Anthony Bradford seems to have won the right guard job. McDonald said he will announce the starting line next week.
This running back stuff, Greg, is interesting to me. We're talking to Greg Bell, Tacoma News Tribune, and KJR covers the Seahawks. In Seattle, he's in Green Bay with this Seahawks-Packers joint practice that's gotten some headlines today, and they've got a preseason finale on Saturday. You know, I love Zach Charbonnet. I really, really do. But I was counting on Ken Walker for some big things this year in this system in particular. How is that shaking out from what you understand? And as you alluded to, Ken's getting back on the practice field with a little bit more urgency lately. I wonder if he's feeling some of that heat that Charbonnet's been applying lately.
I think Maury's feeling the heat of his head coach. And when the head coach not so thinly veils, hey, you need to get on the field, and does it publicly, there was a message there. It wasn't for us. It was for Walker. And he knew Walker, and his people that know him would read that and see that. It is a contract year for him. Walker is playing for his future. At running back, you get it when you can get it, and you don't know when you're going to get it anymore. So this is a big year for him. At that position where the shelf life and the career length is so short, the shelf life is just so short with all the injuries at that position. And ever since Todd Gurley signed the $61 million contract with the Rams and barely played any of it until he got all these injuries, teams don't want to give big deals now, second contracts to running backs. And it's a tough market, as we know. Walker he has to show out this year and have a big season to get a second contract somewhere. This second contract thing is why these guys play football the way they do and get up and do captain's practices and weight training and run the stairs and do two-a-days in high school and college for this second NFL contract. The riches that come to it, Walker has no guarantees about his second contract here. He needs a big year as a lead back. I'm not convinced Charbonnet has the style that Clint Kubiak needs in this outside zone. He needs a runner who can be lateral and then quick up the field, a one-step-and-go guy. And I have not seen as much decisiveness in Charbonnet running, not just this year, but even in the previous systems under the other offensive coordinators, that Walker, to me, has the potential to be. Walker has a one-cut-and-go style. He often does hesitate and wait for his blocks. But in this system, you have to be on time to the assigned gap. The outside zone means running back needs to get there when the zone blockers are arriving. And to me, his style seems more upfield than sometimes Charbonnet can be in this style. We'll see, because they are counting on Kenneth Walker hugely, yet it's not as if Zach Charbonnet is not going to get any carries this year.
Well, you said it, Greg. I feel the same way, or at least I did feel that same way going into the season. Stylistically for the scheme, this is a Kenny Walker scheme. This is great. It's so it's like a Bijan in Atlanta type of situation, and I think Ken is a phenomenal athlete. You know, maybe not quite a Bijan, but close. I think he's close in a similar scheme. I think he could do a lot of good things. So the Charbonnet buzz, which I love Charbonnet, came a little bit of a surprise to me. You know, I remember that Arizona game on the road last year where they did kind of change their running scheme in a way and get more downhill with more gap scheme and more pullers, and Charbonnet thrived, right? He had a big game in that scenario, but that's not what this scheme is. So I find that you said it the same way that I feel. I find that a little bit curious. What do you make of 49ers week 1 and week 18? Is there any talk about that? I guess Mike won't talk about it right now, but from your vantage point, how does that impact the kind of shape of the schedule this year with a division opponent and the Niners of all division opponents to bookend the season?
Well, they have to beat the Niners and the Rams. They have to beat them on the line of scrimmage to win the division, get home playoff games, and get to the Super Bowl. Period, end of story. If you just nutshell it and distill it down, everything we talk about and schedules and who they're going to play, what they need to do, they have to beat the 49ers and the Rams on the offensive and defensive lines. And they have been absolutely dominated by both of those teams in the last several years, which is why they haven't won the division. In the history of the Seattle Seahawks, if they don't have home playoff games, they don't go to the Super Bowl. They might win a playoff game or two. They might pull one off in 20 below zero in Minnesota in years like that. But they ain't going to the Super Bowl without home games in Seattle in January, period. And they have to win a division to do that. The 49ers week one will be a barometer to see where they are in the offensive line against San Francisco's defensive line that has pushed them around for years. It'll be a fascinating first game, and then you mentioned the fact that they don't play them again until the end of the year. They also don't play the Rams till much later on than they normally do. They've opened seasons with L.A. before. They won't know, to answer your question, they won't know if they have what it takes to be at the line of scrimmage to win the division until November, December, because the way the schedule lines up. They could look great against all these other teams. They could do this and they could do that. They don't beat the Rams and 49ers at the line of scrimmage. They're not winning the West. They have a maybe just over 500 season, get a wild card, and they're out in early September or early January.
Yeah, and to your point, the Rams games are week 11 and week 16.
Right.
The last of which is a Thursday night game in Seattle. Could get flexed out by that point, but currently a Thursday night game with the Seahawks and Rams. Couple last things for you. Jalen Milroe playing the whole game on Saturday. What'd you make of that?
Yeah, it's going to be an Alabama SEC game in Lambeau Field on Saturday. It was interesting. Drew Locke's not going to play at all, but I get it. They are not going to see, if this season goes according to any plan at all, they're not going to see Jalen Milroe in all the situations. They're going to see him Saturday. First quarter, adjustment after the first drive, talking to the OC on the sidelines. Second drive, what do you see differently? Adjusting to what the looks the defense is giving you in the first quarter. Then 2-minute drill at the end of the first half. Then coming in at halftime and adjustments for the start of the second half. And so on. And hurry up offense. All the situations that a quarterback can see in an NFL game, even in a vanilla NFL game preseason, they're not going to see Milroe do the entire year. I mean, if Jalen Milroe starts and plays a whole game during the regular season, this Seahawks season has gone way wrong. That means not only is Sam Darnold hurt, then Drew Locke's either hurt or really bad. So the part of the reason they signed Locke was to be the proven veteran backup that's won games for them, that if something does go awry or with Darnold or he's not healthy, that Locke will go in. Milroe is going to be a 4 or 5 or 6 play package guy for games. Count on it. And they want the Niners, they want the Steelers in week 2, the Saints in week 3, and all the NFL defenses they're going to face to have to prepare for that. That's why they did the tush push, bringing in Milroe in the first drive of the Kansas City Chiefs' second preseason game, to get it on film for their opponents to see. But he's not going to get any of these situations he's going to get Saturday, so give him the whole game. Drew Locke's done it before. They know what Drew Locke can do. Let's see Jalen Milroe as an NFL quarterback and see how he's progressed from May, when he was having trouble throwing the ball accurately, and on time to where he is now.
Yeah, really looking forward to it. Last thing for you, Greg, and thanks for your time. Seahawks on DraftKings are plus 550 to win the NFC West division. That's the longest odds. Arizona's got better odds, and obviously the Niners are the favorites, and the Rams are not far behind. But with all that to say, if from your perspective, what is a successful season this year for the Seahawks? What does a successful season look like?
Winning the division. I mean, they were flawed offensively and still won 10 games last year. They were flawed offensively and defensively and the year before that. They need to win the division. They remade the defense midstream last year, brought Ernest Jones in, hiring Mike McDonald as a defense-first head coach. McDonald righted the defense last year. It was one of the top five in the league to finish last season. This year, they've spent all that energy on the offense. And to make it a complete team, if it works the way they've designed it, the offense should be reaching close to, not they won't, I don't think, be nearly as good as overall as the defense, but at least be in the middle of the pack in the league so that the defense can go win them the games. And they may win a lot of 13-10, 17-13 games that way. If they can do enough of that offensively, not turn the ball over, control time of possession, move the sticks and first downs, and let their defense control and win games, they could potentially win the division. I can't predict them that they're going to because I haven't seen them beat the 49ers and the Rams at the line of scrimmage. And for so many years, they've been so bad doing it that until I'm convinced they can do it, I don't think they can. We'll get a lot of a glimpse of that on week one against San Francisco.
Can it just get here already, you know? I'm so much looking forward to it. We'll continue to read you at the Tacoma News Tribune, Greg, and follow you at GBell Seattle. Thanks for joining us from Green Bay this afternoon.
Appreciate it. Take care of Portland. Thanks a lot.
So good. So good. Seahawks, Packers, a little scuffle, but the perfect joint practice fight today. Even if it really wasn't an all-out fight, it was the perfect getting right up to the edge of the line. No one got hurt. I think one guy got ejected, but it's all good. You know, that's exactly what you needed from both sides. Thanks, Greg Bell, for making some time. We'll whip around other stories around the NFL. Lamar Jackson, injury scare yesterday. How is he doing? John Harbaugh making some comments. And Punch and Audio. Plus, get a look at Montana State. You know, week one for the Ducks and Bobcats is about 9 days away. So Montana State beat writer will be joining us in the final hour of the show. Judah Newby, Stephen Vaughn filling in. You've got the Bald-Faced Truth, 750 The Game of the BFT Radio Network.